Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. I have something new for you today, and this is something that I've been thinking about for the last 6 to 9 months, and I'm super excited to share this with you. It's totally different than the 40 weeks, one whole house challenge, but it is definitely organization related. And the name of this series is going to be Organizing Life Stages and Unexpected Events. A few months ago, I was really thinking about my blog and being a professional organizer and what the real need out there for organization was in the world. And when I really sat down and thought about, you know, the fact that I've written over 100 posts on my blog about how to organize different kinds of closets, I thought, seriously, how long am I going to go on talking about organizing closets and different ways to organize your jewelry and makeup? And while those are really fun and I love doing them, I don't get really excited about doing the same project over and over again. Like, I get excited about helping a new family or a new client find the order in their life through organization that frees up their time in order to be able to do other things. So when I looked at where Organize 365 is going in the future, I thought, okay, well, if it's not going to be 100 more organizing your closet posts, what am I going to write about? Like, where do we go from here? Once people have completed the 40 weeks, one whole house challenge, they've gone through it a couple of years like I have, and they really do know where everything is in their house. It's not showroom perfect. I mean, you can walk in, it looks great, but it's not, you know, there's no white glove test going on over here. There's no Better Homes and Gardens walking in here and going, oh my gosh, you've got to see this organization. No, it's just organized and functional and works well, but it's not a magazine. I don't live in a magazine. And every time I try to do a post, like a pretty picture post, or I'm going to rehab something or decorate something, it doesn't fill me up because that's not who I am. I'm a very functional, everyday organizer. That's just who I am. So where could Organize 365 go? And I thought about my life, and I thought about the times when my life was most in chaos. One was, I told you about in the first week of the organizing 40 weeks, one whole house challenge, when I couldn't figure out my paper. And it came up with that Sunday basket idea when my kids were 6 months and 2 years old. And I figured out how to organize my paper. And that was revolutionary. And just being able to teach other people how to get a handle on their paperwork really does change people's lives. Another time when I thought that my organizational skills really helped me survive something was when my father got sick for a year and then passed away. And my sister and I handled his estate and his funeral and wills and all of those things. And it was during that time that I was able to use my organizational skills to really research on the web, find the right book, get the right lists in order, and go through that process in a very organized way with no regrets. Like, by the time we were done with it, because I had done the research in advance and I worked, you know, on making the checklists and making sure I had everything in order, it wasn't like later I found out that I could have done XYZ and I wish I would have known that. And so as I watch my friends who are also in their 40s going through the same things I'm going through in my 40s, which is really that sandwich generation where we're raising our kids, we're trying to earn an income, and we're trying to take care of our parents, there are a lot of responsibilities on us at one time. And then the unexpected happens. Your spouse loses his job, or the stock market tanks, or you find out you're pregnant at 40, or you can't get pregnant, or you're all of a sudden in a court case, or you're the power of attorney for a loved one, or you have to plan a funeral. These are all things that have happened to everyone I know, or may happen to you in the future, and there's no plan book. There's no blog about, you know, like how to file a court case. I mean, maybe there is. And I filed a court case. I sued the state of Ohio, and I figured out all about how do you organize a court case and how do you do all of those things. But it took so much time to figure it out, and there wasn't a resource that I could go to figure it out. So I decided that going forward, it would be really beneficial for people to learn how to organize their life stages and the unexpected events. Because in all reality, not everyone is going to do the 40 weeks, one whole house challenge. And not everyone even wants to have their house organized or wants to devote the time that it would take, I should say, to organize their house. They would rather use that time for something else. And, you know, organization doesn't fill them up like it fills me up. However, when they have to plan an estate or they have to handle a funeral, they're going to need to know information. And if I could create a resource that people could come to when the unexpected happens, just to give you a starting place for your research so that you could go forward and do the research on your own, that's what I would like to do. I would like to offer you information on how organization changes through the different stages of your life and through different unexpected events. So these first two podcasts are going to walk through two of my very first unexpected events. You're going to learn a lot about me, maybe more than you want to know. But this is the kind of stuff that I want to know about the people that I follow on blogs and podcasts and trainers that I know. Like, I would love to peel back the curtain and find out a time in their life when they went through something like I'm going through. So the first unexpected event that I'm going to share with you is our story of infertility. So if you go to organize365.com and in the search box, you're going to type in infertility, I'm going to put a blog post up with this podcast and then some resource links for you to go start your own journey of organizing your infertility if that is an issue for you. So my story with infertility started when I was like 8 years old and I got a baby alive doll. I mean, that was the coolest thing ever because this doll could actually eat food and drink water and had diapers that you had to change. And I was obsessed with my baby alive doll. I hate to tell you, but I played with my baby alive doll until I was like 13 years old. I just loved doll babies. I loved babies in general. When I'm the oldest cousin on both sides, so I would always offer to go spend the night at my aunt's houses so that I could watch the babies and play with the babies. And I remember every single year on my birthday when you would blow out the candles and you could have a wish, my wish was that my mom would get pregnant and we would have another sibling that I could take care of. And when I was 12, you could take the Red Cross babysitting course, and then at the age of 12, you could be a babysitter. So of course, the day I turned 12, I took the Red Cross babysitting course, got my little certificate, and then headed out to our pool. So I was 12 and 1 month old when the pool started. And I went over to the baby pool instead of the big pool, which I normally played in. I went over to the baby pool and I would find like a 2 or 3 year old toddler and I would play with them for like 20, 30, 45 minutes. And then I would go over to the mother and I would say, hi, my name is Lisa and I've been playing with your child, blah, blah, blah. And I just took the Red Cross babysitting course and I am a babysitter. Do you need a babysitter? Like, obviously I have no problem with marketing myself or being forward, whatever. And of course, these mothers who, I don't know, wanted to do other things other than play with 2 and 3 year olds all day said, yes, we would love a babysitter. And then I would go back and I would continue playing with their kids. Another thing I would do is there was a neighborhood that was being developed behind us, and the street that I grew up on had 70 houses, and I know they had 70 houses because I published a newsletter and I put it into their mailboxes, and I also organized the block party that we had every year. But in those 70 houses, there were only 4 children on the entire street, and there were the 2 of us girls in our house and 2 boys in another house, and that was it. No kids. So when this development was going in behind us, there were a lot of families that had younger kids. So I would ride my bike over to that neighborhood and then I would find where the kids were. Well, one day this man and his children were riding bikes in the neighborhood. He was pushing a stroller and his 3 other kids were riding bikes near him. So of course I stopped him and I said, hi, I'm Lisa and I live over, you know, in the neighborhood over there and I'm a babysitter and I notice you're new to the area and could you use a babysitter? And he was like, our house is down there and go talk to my wife. So I went down and talked to her and I did become their babysitter. So as I got older, I was 14 and started high school and I just love babysitting. Like, I have never had any desire to have any other job other than babysitting. The only other job I had during high school was working at a a private baby nursery store where I would go into people's houses and help design their nursery, and I could put together the cribs and all that kind of stuff, or pick out their bedding and make their registry. Like, that was my other job, was to help people get ready to have babies. So, and when summer would approach, as soon as I was 14, I figured out that, you know, I wanted to babysit like 60, 80 hours a week. I wanted to babysit all the time because there were no kids in my neighborhood to play with. So I wanted to be babysitting because that's what I like to do. So I figured out that voluntarily, the four families that I babysat for weren't going to voluntarily hire me for 20 hours each a week, like just like, oh, I think I'll sign up all this time. So I thought, how can I get them to employ me as much as I want to be employed? I knew Friday and Saturday nights were no problem. They were going to hire me for that no matter what. So I approached each of the moms and I said, summer is coming and you want to play golf and get your hair done and go out with your friends and do your grocery shopping without your kids. And I would love to play with your kids and we'll make Play-Doh and we'll go to the pool or we'll do whatever you want. And I'll give you the whole day and you just pick whatever day you want. I'll show up at 8 a.m. and I'll stay until 8 o'clock at night. And you can even go on a date with your husband. Well, I must have been good at selling it, or they really wanted out or whatever. And they all took me up on it. All four of them picked a day where I would come at 8 a.m. and I would stay either until 4 or 8 or 10 or whatever they wanted me to. And the family that had four children now had five children, and she took 2 days. So I was booked Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. until sometimes 8 at night and every single Saturday. And I babysat these families so much that I even went on vacations with them. And I would teach their little kids how to ski. I just loved it. I loved being part of other people's families. I loved children. I came from a really big family. It was great. So in 1990, I graduated high school and I went off to college. And I had two goals. One, I was going to get a teaching degree because that was the best degree to be a mother, in my opinion. If I was going to have to work after I had children, then at least I could be on the same schedule as the kids as a teacher. But my primary goal in going to college was to get my MRS degree. My mother had gone to college, and when she graduated, she married my father, and they had gone to high school together. So they're actually high school sweethearts. But a lot of my other family members had met their spouse in college. And I just logically, thought about it. I thought, when are you ever going to be around this many eligible people in your same demographic with the same goals in the same city? It's just not going to happen once you graduate. So you might as well, you know, find a spouse while you're there. And you have to have a spouse in order to have a baby. And obviously having babies was high on my list. So luckily, I did get my MRS degree. And a year after I graduated from college, I was married. And I was a teacher. So two for two, right? Like, I'm married and I'm a teacher and this is all going great. And when we got married, my husband said, I'd like to wait a year before we start trying to have a baby. And I was like, all right, fine. 9 months later, he said, all right, we could start trying now, which of course I was happy about. So in 1996, we started trying to have a baby. And about 11 months later, in 1997, I knew that we should probably look into infertility. Because as you know, if you've read the blog or listened to anything that I do, once I have a goal, I really go after that goal. And so they say wait a year, 18 months if you don't get pregnant. Well, I mean, it's not like we were just like, oh, well, maybe it'll happen. No, I wanted to have children and it hadn't happened yet. So we went to for infertility, and we have unexplained infertility. There's really no reason why Greg and I never got married. I did have slight endometriosis, and back then when they did that surgery, it was a laparoscopic surgery. Insurance would pay for it if you had the surgery and you had endometriosis. But if you had the surgery and you didn't end up having endometriosis, you had to pay for the bill yourself. So when I came out of the anesthesia, I kept waking up enough to ask my question, but not enough to remember the answer. And every time I could wake up, I would say, did I have it? And they would answer me and I'd fall back asleep again. And then I'd wake up, I go, did I have it? I know I must have driven them crazy because I remember asking it 3 times, which means I probably asked it 30 times. But I did. I did have a tiny bit of endometriosis. Maybe that caused the infertility, who knows, but it was covered under insurance. So that was great. So we tried intrauterine insemination a couple of times using Clomid. I think we actually took Clomid longer than you're supposed to. I think you're supposed to take it 6 months. I think I took it 9, something like that. Then we waited a while and then we went to the shots. I can't remember what they were called, Pergonol or something like that. And for some reason, we actually got ours from France. Like, they flew them in from France, or I don't know. And in April 1999, we decided to stop doing infertility. I had actually quit my teaching job because we were told that my husband's insurance would cover infertility. And so it would be okay if I had quit my job because I was already making as much in direct sales as I had been teaching. And I told my husband, you know, when we have the children, I want to stay home with them anyway. So there's really no more point in me doing this teaching thing. And he agreed because he's a saint. If you haven't noticed, my husband is totally a saint. So I was not teaching. And as soon as I quit that teaching job, we found out that his insurance would not cover infertility. Great. So I was home with no baby. And you can imagine how much energy I put into that direct sales business. And that's also when I wrote the curriculum, Little Kids Worship, the ABCs of the Bible, that would be published in 2007. But I wrote it in 1999. And I remember in April of 1999, we decided that we weren't going to go forward with infertility. We weren't going to do where they make the baby outside of you and put it inside of you. What's that called? You know what I'm talking about. And there were a couple of reasons, none that we were really passionate about. It wasn't like, we would never do that, or we definitely would do that. It was just kind of like, I don't think that's right for us at this time. Number one, it was going to be like $10,000 or $12,000, and it was going to be the same exact price if we did adoption. So I think that was probably one of them, was it was kind of a toss-up. So I'm also going to, in this podcast, go ahead and talk about our adoption story, because they really do meld one into the other. So that was April of 1999. And then in August of 1999, my husband and I went down to Billy Graham's Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina, to hear Steve and Annie Chapman for a marriage retreat. And I love going to conferences. I go to conferences all the time. And I said to my husband, come on, it's Stephen Curtis Chapman. He's a great singer. We could go down there. It'll be fun. You know, we could go to the Biltmore. It'll be awesome. So we drove down there. It was a great trip. We drove down there and Steve and Annie Chapman were there playing their piano and guitars or whatever. And I was like, wow, this music is really good. I wonder where Stephen Curtis Chapman is. And after they'd done their playing, I'm looking around and we were in our 20s. Greg was in his late early 30s. I was in my late 20s. And everybody else there was like 45, 50, 60, you know. I thought, this is odd. And there was one other young couple like us. And then Steve Chapman says, you know, what's funny at this point in the retreat is usually when we know who came here thinking it was Stephen Curtis Chapman and not Steve and Annie Chapman's marriage retreat. Like some people will come here thinking it's Stephen Curtis Chapman, the singer, but it's Steve and Annie Chapman. And Greg looks at me and I was like, oh man, but it ended up being a really, really great marriage retreat, ended up being a great time. And one of the things we did there was you can go to the chapel. And when you're in the prayer room in the chapel at Billy Graham's training center, you are directly under the pinnacle of the mountain. And at the top of the mountain is a cross. So you're directly at the foot of the cross when you're in the prayer room. And they'll do intercessory prayer for you. And I remember having them pray that I would get pregnant, which is what I had done, you know, so many times. I'd read through the Bible 3 or 5 times. I can't remember in that 18 months I hadn't been working. And I was literally obsessed with having children. I was definitely obsessed with having children. And I remember clear as day hearing God say, do you want to be pregnant or do you want a child? And I just was like, even now I'm just tearing up thinking about like, I just want a baby. Like, I just want a baby. It doesn't, I don't have to be pregnant. And I had wanted to be pregnant. I mean, even until last year, I always thought, well, maybe when I'm 40, I'll get pregnant. Which I think is a good thing I didn't, because I don't know if I'd still have a husband because he'd die. But the idea of being pregnant is just so, it just means so much to me. Like, I would love to be pregnant. But at the same time, going through infertility, I prayed, Lord, if I would lose the baby, I don't think I'd recover. So don't ever let me get pregnant if I would miscarry, because I don't think I could have handled that. So Greg and I talked about it on the way home, and we talked about the idea of, do we want to be pregnant or do we want a child? And pretty much it was going to be $10,000 or $12,000 either way, if we adopted or if we tried to make the baby outside of the body, put it in the body thing. Why? I can't remember what that's called. I don't know. And we decided that we wanted a baby, that that's what we wanted, and we would start the adoption process. So I chose to do private adoption because it's faster. And like I told you, when I have a goal, I'm like really super, super set on that goal. And I was a scrapbooking consultant and it was $19.99. And at that time, and true today also, is the birth mother will pick the family that she wants to have her baby. So she'll read all these letters and look at all these pictures from all these families that are hoping to adopt, and then she will pick who gets to have her baby. And so I thought, well, letter? We're not doing a letter. We're going to do a scrapbook. And I'm not even color copying the scrapbook. Like, I'm making 10 original scrapbooks, which took me a week because I'm crazy. And I got them done and out there, and it cost way more than making letters, but that's who we were. Like, I was a scrapbooker. We were going to make a little scrapbook for this family, and we got picked right away. And the baby was going to be due December 21st. And on something like December 17th, the adoption fell through. I can't even remember why. And I about lost my mind. I mean, literally, I about lost my mind. We went home for Christmas, and I had talked about having children so much that my father had named them. They were Inviso 1 and Inviso 2. And so whenever I would talk about these children, my dad would say, "So, Lise, how are the Invisos doing?" Because they were like so real, because I talked about them all the time. I remember I got a SpongeBob the tomato, you know, from that Larry the Cucumber, SpongeBob the tomato. Is it SpongeBob the tomato or Bob the tomato from VeggieTales? The stuffed animal at Christmas, because we were expecting a baby. And I remember carrying around this tomato all Christmas. And my husband was like, "Could you please put the tomato down?" I was like, "No." And I knew if I put the tomato down, like, you were going to have to put me into some kind of round room that was padded, because I was so close to losing my mind. We got home and we were supposed to go to a wedding on January 8th of 2000, but we weren't going to, because we were going to have a new baby. But now that we didn't have a baby, we were like, well, we'll just drive out to Greg's cousin's wedding in Philadelphia. So we did that. And I remember his cousin saying to me, "Are you still going to adopt? Do you still want to adopt, even though you just lost this baby?" And I said, "Yes, we are definitely still going to adopt." Well, we didn't know it, but our son was being born at that moment as I was saying, "Yes, we're still going to adopt, and we're not even in the same state." And 5 days later, we brought Joey home. And it's interesting because my mom said when we stopped trying, our last in vitro attempt was April of 1999, and that baby would have been due and delivered when Joey was born. So she made that connection from her journal, which is super, super cool. So it was only 4 months from when we started the adoption process until we adopted Joey. And when he was 10 months old, we got a call from the agency and they said, "We have some news. You've been picked to adopt a baby." And we said, "That is so interesting, because we aren't in the running." And they're like, "Yeah, we know, but one of your books accidentally got in this bin that went to this mother and she picks you." And we were like, "Okay, great." Well, she was only 20 weeks pregnant and they said she probably will not follow through, but if she does, she's due in March. Well, we never heard anything. March came and went and there was no baby, and we were pretty sure that there wasn't going to be a baby. So that was all right. But in April, we went on an incentive trip that I had earned with my direct sales company, and we were walking on the beach and Joey was 14 months at the time. And I said to Greg, I said, "Now, you know, I always wanted my babies to be 18 months apart, and I realized that's not going to happen because they say it takes 11 months for the first adoption and 2 years for the second adoption, and Joey's was faster than normal, but that's not normal, so it's going to be at least 11 months, probably 2 years before we get the next one. And I know we just paid off the adoption like last week, but could we go ahead and at least be in the running, you know, just because it's going to take a while to get our second child. Could we just, you know, like start? I'll go slow this time." And he said, "Okay." So we got home and I did go slow. I waited like a whole week to get all of my paperwork ready, and then I turned it all in on time. And the agency took the new album off the top of what we had put in and put it in the mail that day going out to a birth mom who the next week picked us. And they called us. They said, "You've been picked." After my husband fell on the floor, he's like, "Okay, so guess those babies are going to be closer together than we thought." And Abby ended up being born 3 days shy of exactly 18 months from when Joey was born. So our children actually are 18 months apart, which is just amazing. Infertility and adoption are really, really challenging issues to go through. They're so all-consuming for the person who is going through them, and time moves so slowly when you want something so badly, and there's no way that you can get that thing, that baby. And so if you are going through infertility or the adoption process, I so feel for you. I so remember those days. Something happened with another adoption along the way. We thought we were going to have this baby and we didn't. And I came home and we had Joey. I came home and I said, let's take him to Chuck E. Cheese. So we took him to Chuck E. Cheese and my husband drinks beer and I don't. And so Greg got a beer. I said, I'll hold that for you. And I started pounding his beer. I don't drink beer. I have like a glass of wine 3 times a year. I like don't drink at all. And I start pounding this beer. I'm like, yeah, you're probably going to need to go get another one. So he gets another one, brings it back and go, I'll hold that for you. I start drinking that one. I said, yeah, you're probably going to need another one. He's like, oh my gosh, I only drank 2 or 3 beers. I don't know what it was. But for me, it would have been like drinking a case or something. We come home, I'm laying on the front yard on my back going, why don't we have a baby? The neighbors come over, they're like, it's going to be all right. Come over here and talk to us. And so we went over on their back patio and we talked all night with the baby monitor so we could hear Joey. And it's just hard. It's just hard. But there are a lot of things that you can do or a lot of things that you can learn if you're in that infertility process and you're wondering if adoption is right for you. There's a great book that I found that I'll link over on the Organized 365 page. There's also checklists and different things I've found out now that we've adopted that we should have done in the very first days when we were in that adoption process. So the whole purpose now is that I'm going to go write a post over on organized365.com. And when you go over there and you search infertility or adoption, you're going to end up on this post, which is going to lead you to this podcast and also any links or other sites that I think would be relevant and help you with this stage of life that you're going through. So this is Organizing Life Stages and Unexpected Events, and I hope that you'll tune in for the next episode. I hope you got some good nuggets of information on how to get organized in today's podcast. Come on over to organize365.com to check out all the resources and links in today's show.